From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Laura Dunn wanted to make a film about the poet and farmer Wendell Berry, but Berry doesn't like film, really. And he doesn't trust the limited perspective of a camera. It doesn't show things living eyes can see, that's how he put it. Still, Dunn pushed ahead with her documentary project, which required some imagination. Turned out that's a theme in the film, or a question. Do we have the imagination to restore a connection to land, restore the ideals of diminishing family farms? We don't see Berry on camera in the film, except some archival shots, but we do hear his voice and his eloquent observations about the importance of being in one place and understanding that as a standpoint from which to see the whole world. We continue our coverage of the Sundance Film Festival today. Laura Dunn is talking about her film, Look and See, A Portrait of Wendell Berry, after the news.
Support for Radio West comes from thousands of sustainers, listeners just like you who give ongoing monthly donations to help pay for the public radio shows they rely on. Show your love for Radio West by becoming a sustainer, starting at just $5 a month at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we continue our coverage of some of the documentaries at this year's Sundance Film Festival, now underway in Park City. Laura Dunn's film about the poet and farmer Wendell Berry is featured in the festival this year. And it was a challenge for Dunn. Berry didn't want to be filmed or treated like a beloved soothsayer. He did talk to her on tape about his life, about his dismay over the industrialization of agriculture and the receding culture of family farms. And then Dunn had to fill in the visual space, so she went to Berry's farm in Henry County, Kentucky. For all four seasons, she went on walks with him. The film she created is called Look and See, A Portrait of Wendell Berry. Dunn joined us in the studios of the Park City Community Radio Station, KPCW, to talk about her attempt to make a film that is both an argument for the culture of the family farm and a tone poem about land. Dunn is director, producer, and editor of the film, which opened over the weekend at Sundance. We'll give you details about this week's screenings as we go along. I want to begin with the time you met Wendell Berry for the first time. What was the moment like when you – I suppose you knew his work at the time. What was it like to then meet him, and what did you expect?
That's a great moment, actually. There's a nice story with that. So Jeff, who's now my husband, was just a friend of mine at the time, and I had written a letter to Wendell asking if he would do a reading of his poem, Santa Clara Valley, which was in my last feature, The Unforeseen. And he graciously agreed to let us come see him in Port Royal, Kentucky. And it was in February, so we drove from Texas to Port Royal, and we ended up encountering one of the worst ice storms in recent memory in Kentucky at the time. This was in 2004. And so we felt like we sort of risked our lives to get to see Wendell, because that morning we drove down this very steep precipice that was covered in ice. We finally arrived at his home. We got there, and he had left us a handwritten note on his door saying he had stepped out for a little bit, he'd be back. So we were sort of waiting around in the ice and the snow. And he pulled up in his pickup truck, and first thing he said when he looked at me is he said, "I was hoping you wouldn't come." Like, we had just gone on this sort of Odyssean journey to arrive at Wendell's homestead, and he had wished we weren't there. So that's Wendell in a nutshell. Of course, he proceeded to be a true gentleman and welcomed us into his living room. We sat in his living room, talked with him for a couple of hours, and he shared all kinds of insights and wisdom.
But what is that? What did he mean by that? And I guess that expresses his graciousness yet reluctance at the same time to, what, be interviewed, be out in the open like that? Is that it?
Sure. My sense of Wendell is that, you know, he's an artist, he's a thinker, he values his peace and his quiet. Mm. He loves to be home. He's not interested in fame. He is a member of his community and his small community, and that's who he is. And the fame that goes along with his gifts that he shared with the world is not something that he seeks. I think that he does genuinely enjoy friendship, yeah, and ideas, and I've had many a lovely conversation with him, but attention in the media sense No, it is not something that he enjoys.
Which sort of leads us to one of the most sort of conspicuous parts of the film, and that is the fact that he doesn't actually appear on camera. Mm-hmm. Let me play a moment from the film where he talks about what he calls the limits mm-hmm. of a camera.
If my work is writing, then I have to make sure that I do it. That's why I don't participate in films. The limits of a camera is that it's always looking through a frame. There's certain things that you can't show that living eyes can see. To determine where to set that lens, where it's going to look from, requires imagination.
So I'm trying to imagine. At what point did he reveal to you, or did you always assume this is not going to be easy to get him on camera, or was that just a given, do you think, from the beginning?
Well, this film kind of opened up by way of letter writing back and forth between myself and Wendell, and there was sort of a song and dance there. This is what I'd like to do. Okay. This is what I'd like to do. No, thank you. It really was Tanya, his wife, who invited me to come back and to do the film. I didn't want to intrude on one of my, you know, heroes in a sense. You know, you want to be respectful. And yet, I set out to make a film that would simply draw more attention to his work, because his work has meant a great deal to me personally. I think one of the things I've been thinking about in the context of our moment in history is that Wendell's writings and his words have given me such a sense of hope and resilience in the face of what can feel like overwhelming, insurmountable odds and despair, particularly as someone who's concerned about the preservation of the natural world in this culture. So I just wanted to draw more attention to his work, but I didn't want to make a sprawling issues piece.
Yeah.
I had done that and I was tired of that. I wanted something more intimate, more personal. And so I wanted to draw a portrait of Wendell Berry. That was the idea that I just couldn't shake. But to me, I was never daunted by the fact that he has a very low regard for the medium of film. He does not like screens of any kind. He doesn't have a computer. He doesn't watch TV. And we had conversations about that, and some of the things he said to me early on was that it, you know, contributes to the decline of literacy, screens deaden the imagination, they become dominant so quickly, and he's concerned about that. These are all things, as a filmmaker, honestly, I sort of agree with.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did think that I would film him. I think early on thought I would film him, but when he made it clear to me, he was uncomfortable with that. There's an idolatry that he thinks comes with that kind of attention. And he said to me once, and this is an important quote, I think, and gets to the whole way we approached the film, is he said, "I am nothing but for the people around me in the place in which I live. That is who I am."
Yeah.
And that to me was a moment where it said, oh, okay, you know, well, I don't need to film him, because a portrait can be the likeness of someone's face in a literal sense, but a portrait also can reflect the essence of someone. And so, you know, it might not have been the most marketable idea, but I wasn't too concerned about that. I was more concerned about how do you, you know, capture and preserve something of this great thinker. And so I said to him, well, I don't need to film you. Yeah. And I'll promise you right now, I won't ask to film you. And we would do audio interviews. And then the material from the film would be drawn from the things he cares about, which right. are his people, the people where he, his neighbors, his family, his place.
It's a portrait, but I also have heard you describe it as a tone poem. And it seems like the way we experience Wendell Berry in the film is on walks around his farm, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we see all seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, then the whole point in the clip we just listened to is the whole idea of point of view, that – you know, one can make a picture of someone. So I could do a portrait of you and the way you look, and I could draw literally how I see you. Or you could try to get inside someone's eyes and look out and see their point of view. So rather than the way the world sees Wendell, I became interested in how does Wendell see the world? What does the world look like through these eyes? And that's where the ideas about the limit of the frame and the camera and Wendell's reticence about being on film, I think, is very important information about how he sees things.
Yeah.
And it challenges us to use our imagination rather than to look for all the answers in an image, which is what we all do. The seasons, yes. So if I really want to make the place a character in the film, I felt like you go back to the same place over and over again through the seasons that illuminates the natural world in a sense, and it shows you this same place. You get to know the place more intimately, which is a big theme in Wendell's work. And the walks, every Sunday, if you read any of Wendell's poems, he has a beautiful collection called the Sabbath Poems, and he's written them over many decades. And they're based on these walks that he takes on Sundays. He likes to take walks and just observe and listen. And those poems, I think, kind of capture the essence of Wendell's reverence for the natural world. And so the film is, in a sense, a tone poem in that it's trying to channel the artistic vision of Wendell Berry.
He had this big window installed in his house. He wanted to see the field and his land outside of his office. It's a big window.
Mm-hmm.
And in this part of the film, he talks about the importance of that view.
I'd put that window in with the feeling that it would be awfully interesting to look out through it. It's a large window with 40 panes, so it's a graph. And what you see beyond it is the natural world, which doesn't behave like the figures that normally occur within a graph. It's not entirely an intelligible graph. In a sense, what I've done all my life is hold up an artifact that you can, so to speak, see through against the world.
Seems like that point of view is an important theme in his work, but also in the film. Like that idea of framing. And there's a beautiful scene later in the film where someone closes a gate and it has this graph. And it's like this idea of framing is really part of the visual sense of the film.
Yes. I mean, it's that point of view. How do you see the world? And I think that clip where Wendell talks about his 40-pane window through which he looks into the natural world, I think it gets to me, it really speaks to me. And the reason why I include that so prominently is because, you know, in the world of quote unquote environmentalism, you often have people who think of nature as sort of godlike and pristine and we shouldn't touch it and it should be over here. And then you have people who kind of look at the natural world as there for us to use. And we're supposed to, you know, my other film, there's a developer who looks at the land as a blank grid.
Yeah.
And you're just going to build your own image. They're not interested in what's there. They're interested in a reflection of themselves. And I think Wendell speaks beautifully in many of his writings and many of his conversations. He sort of gets at the theology behind his worldview of our relationship with nature. And it's an interaction. And we're humans. And we have a limited view. And we are aware of that limited view. And yet we're trying to look through that and look at something that's full of mystery but has all this information for us. And that tension between the limits of our own view and the majesty of what we see through that, I think, is something to always keep in mind and in your own spiritual life. So that's where that window becomes a metaphor.
I want to ask you about this, the way you've structured the film. It begins with one of Wendell's poems, A Timbered Choir, where he writes about the, as he puts it, the destruction of all objects. And to clear the way to victory, he says, to clear the way to self-realization, to self-creation. And here's sort of the crucial point, from which nobody who ever wanted to go home would ever get there now.
Mm.
Like this idea of displacement. And so that's where you begin, like in that place. And it seems like the film is a process of trying to rebuild.
Mm.
Is that sort of there?
Yes, absolutely. And I think later in the film, you hear me, this one rare moment. I don't ever like to put myself in a film, but it was this personal moment where I'm asking Wendell about, you know, I'm a child of divorce, right? I'm a kid from the 80s and I'm no longer a kid. But then I was in a sort of divorce and displacement and moving all the time. And I know a lot of people, we feel sort of this unraveling of things. And so, yes, I think that there is this sense of trying to find a home in the world, a world where it seems like everything that I love is continually being destroyed by this, by greed and development and destruction. And so that need to try to find not only a home in the world, but to try to find some hope through the overwhelming odds and statistics is very much the process of the film. And I think that if you read Wendell's work, and particularly what he's writing now and what he'll talk about now, is that you'll ask him, like, how do you find hope? And he'll say, hope's a virtue. You've got to have it. And he's interested in cultivating that, not in a naive and kind of, you know, la-la land kind of way, in a very sober way, but to say, you know, yes, we can talk about how awful things are, but let's find those places where there is a sense of home, where there is a sense of preservation, where there is wholeness, and build upon that, focus on that. So I was drawn to Wendell's world because I myself feel a need for that.
I actually want to play that moment where we do hear you briefly, and you're talking about that idea of displacement. Because I want to have you talk a little bit more about this moment. Because what I liked about it was it seemed to reveal something about it wasn't just him talking. It was him talking to you. And so in that sense, it made this moment kind of personal. Mm-hmm. So let me play this moment and we can talk about this and kind of the relationship with Wendell Berry. Mm-hmm.
Because I don't come from a place, I come from divorce.
We all come from divorce. Now, this is an age of divorce. Things that belong together have been taken apart. And you can't put it all back together again. What you do is the only thing that you can do. You take two things that ought to be together and you put them back together. Two things, not all things. That's the way the work has to go. So that the made thing becomes a kind of an earnest of your faith in and your affection for the great coherence that we miss and would like to have again. That's what we do. People who make things. If it's a stool or a film or a poem or an essay or a novel or a musical composition, it's all about that. Finding how it fits together and fitting it together.
That's such a unique part of the film in some way, because I'm hearing you respond to him. Mm-hmm. And how do you describe your relationship with him? And we should maybe explain that sort of the sound you're hearing is people making things, and people fitting things together. That's an important part of it. But it's almost like he's tutoring you or advising you, and at this point, you're kind of friends.
I think Wendell's a gracious and generous teacher to many people. And I think that that's sort of the relationship is student to teacher for sure. And I feel immensely privileged to have had time with him and am grateful for that. And in no way can I ever summarize who he is or presume to be someone who can speak for him. I'm more sort of a humble kind of student trying to learn from someone who whose work has meant a great deal to me. I think the idea of what that clip makes me think about is, you know, I've been doing documentary for 20 years and I've watched a lot of films, and there's sort of the journalism of documentary where you go out and you document problems in the world and you show the math. And I'm interested in issues around the environment. So if you're going to look at water issues, you know, you go out, you document it, you document injustice, environmental racism, or these different issues, right? And I spent about 20 years doing that and found myself in a place of great despair. Because if you do the math, that's kind of a simple way of saying, if you simply look at the statistics, you know, you don't have a whole lot to go on. There are moments that are good, but I think what I was seeking in this process was Not just documenting the decline of rural America, the problems and the limitations of a global economy on a huge number of people in this country, a sense of disenfranchisement, the decay of the natural, the landscapes, because there's not enough people stewarding the land in these places, the industrial agriculture, the economics, how it's hurt small farmers. There's all of that in the film,
yep.
And it's really important that that be conveyed. However, I think why I want people to read more Wendell Berry books is because he's a voice who also is an artist, and there's a transcendence there. You can get in all the statistics, but then he can paint a picture for you that helps you in your own mind lift up from all of that and try to build on something better. And I think that's a very rare voice in this day.
That's Laura Dunn. Her film is called Look and See, A Portrait of Wendell Berry. There's a screening tomorrow evening at 6:30 in Park City at the Redstone Cinema 1. Also Saturday evening at 6 at the Broadway in Salt Lake City. You can find links and more information on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we continue our coverage of the Sundance Film Festival with one that looks at rural America through the eyes of the writer and farmer Wendell Berry. Laura Dunn has made a film built around Berry's voice and his words, and it's about the industrial and economic changes that have come to farming in this country, but also the challenge that Berry gave his children and others about paying attention to the world around you. The film is called Look and See, A Portrait of Wendell Berry. We had a conversation with Laura Dunn at the Park City Community Radio Station, KPCW. I want to ask you about we have to talk about the sort of mechanization of agriculture, because as you said, it is an important part. His book, Wendell Berry's book, The Unsettling of America, important for you. And it's almost, is it fair to say it's kind of a text, I think you've said, for the for the film on some level. I want to play a clip of a farmer named Steve Smith, who featured in the film. And I loved how he talked about how important that book was to him. Mm-hmm. Do you want to explain who he is first before we play this moment, Steve?
Sure. Steve Smith is a farmer in neighboring Trimble County, and he, for many generations, his family have been subsistence farmers. And in the 80s, when it was his turn to take on the family farm, that was when there was a big, you know, growth in farming, in the sense that the farmers were sizing up. He was farming thousands of acres, doing big, large-scale tobacco, because that's what everyone thought they had to do to make ends meet. But he had the insight to see, this is killing me. This is killing my land. It's killing the farm. I'm not making any money. And so he put it aside and reimagined his farm. He ended up starting the first CSA in Kentucky. It became wildly successful because he's a very talented farmer. But he wrote a letter to the Louisville newspaper and said, I'm a tobacco farmer. Can't do that anymore. But is anyone out there willing to eat my vegetables? I'll grow them if you'll eat them. And he had this wonderful CSA, and he ended up within 15 years paying off his farm and is in a wonderful place now. He's restoring Amish farming implements, and he has a beautiful, healthy farm. And I think he's a really important voice because he's not someone who went to Ivy League school, came back and said, I'm going to start a CSA. He's someone who can show the economics of it. There's an economic argument for this. It's not just some pie-in-the-sky sort of idealism. This is better for your farm. You can sustain it, you can pay it off, and you can enjoy it as you go. So that's who Steve Smith is. He's really, to me, a great inspiration for farmers everywhere.
In my first year of the CSA, one of my customers asked me if I'd heard Wendell Berry. And I said, no, of course not. And they gave me a book called The Unsettling of America. It was like, oh, my God, someone has written the story of my people, you know, my experience. And that was different, to have it put into words that really, you know, were really honest. And also they captured the emotion of it, you know, the feeling, the way we felt about it. With you know, it was respectful of it. We weren't used to being respected. That was different.
That's almost a theme in the film also, this idea of respect for farmers and people in nowhere, as Wendell put it. Maybe say something about it, that. That's actually a chapter in the film, this idea of nowhere and this idea of imbuing respect in rural America again.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think post-election, presidential election, that has been something that is a sign of hope to me. You know, in when you're trying to make a farm sort of a loving portrait of white male tobacco farmers from the rural South, it's kind of hard to get funding from the documentary gatekeepers of the world, because most of those folks are wonderful, intelligent, insightful people based in New York and LA who maybe don't have a lot of understanding or experience with Middle America. And I think that what I have wanted to do is say, you know what, like, there's people here and they have stories and they need to be regarded. They need to be a part of the conversation. And I think what happened with this election is that it illuminated that, that there's people here that are frustrated and are hurting and need to be a part of the conversation. And I think, you know, one of the first steps is saying, let's listen to them. Let's hear these stories. You know, in the film, in that nowhere section, Wendell talks about how he had often been asked by the New York Times to write an op-ed piece. And he says, I didn't want to write an op-ed piece. Why do I want to write an op-ed piece? What you need to do is get a team of journalists down into rural America and report on what's going on here. And I think that there's maybe an opening for that now, to say there are important stories here. They're not, it's not just a monolithic caricature. There's complexity and there's a lot to learn here. And so I do think, for me, the film really comes from that place of loving and respecting these people and not wanting, you know, documentarians to come in and as missionaries trying to correct these people's wrong ways, but yet to say, I'm here to learn and I'm here to listen. And I think that is what I hope, what kind of effect I hope it does have on the viewer. I want to say one quick thing about The Unsettling of America is just being here at Sundance, I feel like it's just proper to say it, is that my last film, I was privileged enough to work with Robert Redford on it. And at the end of that film, I was exhausted and wasn't particularly excited about doing another film. I think a lot of documentarians probably know that feeling. After you've worked on something for 8 years, you're like, I'm done, I'm going to retire. But it was Robert Redford who said, what's your next project? I want to help you. And at the time, I was rereading The Unsettling of America. I come from a long line of agricultural people, and so that was a book that was on my mind. And I told him that. And it turns out that in the 1970s, when that book was published, it was a really important book to him as well. He was giving out copies of it to people in the 70s because it had a big impact on him and his thinking. So he was right there with me. And I just think about that now, having worked on the film for 7 years and now getting to bring it to Sundance, how grateful I am that he sort of pushed me through my own fatigue and kind of inspired me to go again.
Let's talk about the 1970s, because this is something seems to have been happening. There was some transformation happening. This seemed really critical. Like the early 70s, there's this Secretary of Agriculture named Earl Butz. Who in this moment from the film, which you include this archival snippet here, he's explaining the importance of making farming profitable, that we have to learn that lesson.
Now the story we take out is that if you want to eat well down the road, and if you want your sons and your grandsons to eat well 10 and 20 and 30 years hence, we're going to put a little profit out there. We're going to make this industry pay. And the way you make it economically attractive is to regain respectability for a very simple six-letter word. It's spelled P-R-O-F-I-T. It's just that simple, gentlemen. And the welfare of America rests on it. Thank you.
Do you think this was a moment that when things started to turn? Because it almost seems like, wow, maybe Maybe that was it, or certainly that sentiment.
Certainly. I mean, Wendell cites, you know, post-World War II, where there was a change. There was really the industrialization of our whole economy and the introduction of a lot of chemicals into agriculture and the scaling up of production, you know, farms getting bigger and bigger and bigger, monocultures, so on and so forth. But I do think in the 70s, with Earl Butz, there was a new level of that. There was a new articulation of that philosophy and approach to agriculture. And the reason why that is important is also in the portrait of Wendell Berry is because that's really when Wendell started writing about it. It's when he debated Earl Butz.
Yeah.
And when he started, when he wrote The Unsettling of America, when he really started forming his arguments that eerily are more pertinent today than they were 40 years ago. And one thing, you know, in talking with Wendell and with Tanya and with Mary, Wendell's daughter, Mary Berry, they say, you know, at that time in the 70s, Wendell really felt like he was a voice in the wilderness. He had no, he was saying things that he didn't seem like there were anyone else around him. There may be a few here and there who were with him. And he does cite that as something positive, that today, 40 years later, although the fight wages on, that there are a lot more voices, there are a lot more people listening and thinking about these ideas.
Here's a moment in a debate between Wendell Berry and Earl Butz, where he talks about that Earl is talking quantity. As Wendell says here, I'm not talking about quantities, I'm talking about values. And there seems like an important insight in here. Here's Wendell Berry.
As I see it, the farmer standing in his field is not isolated as simply a component of a production machine. He stands where lots of lines cross. Cultural lines. The traditional farmer, that is the farmer who was first independent, who first fed himself off his farm and then fed other people, who farmed with his family, who passed the land on down to people who knew it and had the best reason to take care of it. That farmer stood at the convergence of traditional values, our values, independence, thrift, stewardship, private property, political liberty, family, marriage, parenthood, neighborhood. Values that decline as that farmer is replaced by technologist whose only standard is profit.
How outrageous was something a statement like that in the 1970s? Who was listening to him then, do you think?
I don't think that he thought many people were listening to him. But, I mean, if you look back in the 70s, I think you do see the beginnings of some of these ideologies forming. And I think, you know, that age-old debate, I mean, really it goes much further back than the 1970s, but this debate between the sort of, you know, unfettered capitalism and something different where the standard is not simply, you know, what something is trading on Wall Street, but is actually the standard is the health of the community. And putting, you know, Wendell writes about this a lot, and he writes about economics a lot in a way that has influenced me. And he talks about the root, the Greek root word for economy is really pointing to the idea of husbandry. So it's not simply a numbers game. It's the stewardship and care for your household. And that's where it begins. And his book, Home Economics, is a great place to start to look into some of those ideas. And I think a lot of us intuit that. We intuit that, you know, just the bottom line doesn't reflect our values. that there's something else going on there. And I think right now is a really important time with the new administration coming in to be cognizant of that and mindful of that, because it's easy to think that this outsider is a populist. But if you look at the kind of history of free market economics and what that has done to communities, what has done to the land, what it has done to the small businessman, the small or middle-sized family farmer, it paints a very different picture. And so to really become articulate and own those ideas of what does economics mean to me? What does a healthy economy look like? And what are the values that we need to be bringing forth in our political system? And I think all of that is wrapped up in some of those clips you just played.
I want to ask you about this visual moment that I paid attention to, and I'm maybe reading more into it than there was there. But there's a moment where this machine is harvesting, I'm not sure if it's tobacco or whatever it is, but it's just engulfing these machines and harvesting it. And there's a little sliver that hasn't been harvested yet. And it seems like the machine is going to go past it. But then it turns around and it engulfs that too. Like, that seemed really meaningful to me. Like, oh, that machine is going to get every last bit.
That's interesting. Yeah, that was corn.
Corn, okay.
That was a combine harvester harvesting corn. Yeah, those machines, I mean, and Wendell writes a lot about this, you know, the relationship a machine has to the land versus the relationship that a person has to the land. So if you're farming 2,000 acres and you're doing it mostly with machines, you're not walking that land. There's very few, as his good friend Wes Jackson says, there's very few eyes to acres. So unless you're out there walking the land, really observing the land, you're not going to see when a certain species of plant, and Wendell talks a lot about the black willow, disappears. These signs of health and in on the land, you're not going to see them because you have to get 2,000 acres done and you have a huge machine that, by the way, creates a lot of debt load for these farmers that then they're, you know, they've got loans to banks for millions of dollars to try to pay those John Deere combine harvesters, which are very expensive. So that machine is, yes, it's a machine engulfing that corn, and the farmer who's farming like that has no other choice but to use the machine and to use the chemicals, because if you're going to farm at that scale, you have to. And a lot of really good, wonderful people have become convinced that that is the only way they can pay off their – they pay their bills, stay on their farm, is to get bigger. But the problem is you get bigger and then you have more debt load, and that starts to swallow you whole. So the machine, yes, it is a physical thing, but it's also very much a metaphorical way of understanding our relationship to the land and how it's changed.
An important part of the film are the conversations you have with the farmers
trying
to make a living on this land. Steve Smith, we mentioned, we'll hear him in this moment. There's another farmer here. That cycle, as you say, input costs go up, prices don't change, the margins are really slim. The only result is farming more and more and more. And we will hear these two farmers from this from the film.
So it was just an awful situation. It was just not what I had in mind at all. It was not what I, it was not my small farm dream that I had as a youth. And I had to farm extensively and borrow lots of money. And
well, my line of credit is very high. I'm not going to say how much because it's very big. It's more than I ever even thought about. And it seemed like each year gets bigger, but it just, 10 years ago, I would have never dreamed it would have cost what it does to put a crop out now. So it's just crazy what it costs. And sometimes it gets a little hard to sleep at night toward the end of the year when the crops are all on the ground, all the money spent, and we just need a good crop to repay the banks back, and sometimes it gets a little, makes a person very anxious, I would say.
From Laura Dunn's film, Look and See, A Portrait of Wendell Berry. There's a screening tomorrow evening in Park City, one on Saturday evening at the Broadway in Salt Lake City. You can get links and more information on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation with Laura Dunn, who is the director, producer, and editor of the documentary film Look and See, A Portrait of Wendell Berry. It was nice seeing young people talking about how they wanted to farm.
Mm-hmm.
They went to college for their mother, and they wanted to come back. I really liked that.
Mm.
Did that give you a sense of hope, too?
And heartbreak.
Yeah.
You know? I think this is the thing. I think for me personally, when you talk about one's ethic in your work as a documentarian, I want to go into a place and I don't want to demonize. I don't want to create black and white. I don't want to say this person's good, this person's bad. I think there's vastly more complexity. There's a lot more complexity to any story than that. And the farmer you just heard, you know, Mark Roberts, is one of the nicest guys I've ever met. And he cares a lot about his farm. He cares a lot about the people who work on his farm. His dad and him work together every day. And it's a picture of generational family farming. It's not the enemy, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think
But he's a different kind of farmer than Steve.
He has become convinced that this is the only way he can make it, the only way he can make ends meet. And it's sad to him. He doesn't like farming that way necessarily. And there are many farmers who would argue that is the only way we can make ends meet. Mm. And so those are some of the people that I think it's really important to listen to that, because is it the only way for them to make ends meet? And if so, what kind of economy are we supporting that destroys our own land? I think the young farmers, we did an interview with a group of young farmers, and they were all in their late 20s or early 30s. And the only reason why I got all those guys in a room that May afternoon was because it had been a lot of rain and it was muddy, and so none of them could do any planting. And the judge in Henry County asked them to join us that day. So I was really lucky. And I remember sitting there doing that interview and thinking, we have a different kind of film now when I heard from them. Mm. Because these were all young guys just starting out, some of them not married, some of them maybe married, some of them maybe about to have their first child, and saying, yeah, I'm going to go off to college. And many of the young people in rural communities leave. They're eager to leave. But this group of young men just said, no, I want to come back home and I want to farm. It may not be the hip, you know, ever-progressing way to live, but it's what I care about. It's what I value. And they're there making a go of it. And they're all different. They all approach it differently. And there is hope in that. But it also sort of breaks your heart a little bit because you know what they're up against. And yet you see it's what they're going to do and they're going to go after it. And you know some of them may not make it. But I think they're an important voice because they show you the possibilities.
Mm. I want to play another moment from the film where we hear from his daughter, Mary. Mm. She's prominently placed in here. And she's one of the things that she's talked about. And it seems like another one of the themes here is Wendell talked to you about the importance of imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Mary talks about that too. And toward the end of the film, she talks about how we have to introduce culture into the scheme of things. And she mentions that a local food movement has to be something more than just a trip that we take to the farmer's market on Saturday.
Yes. I think we have an opportunity right now to get hold of a local food movement and make it a cultural change that will matter. If it stays a local food movement, it will not matter because it's not talking about land use. It's not talking about the economies in food producing places. It starts and stops at a farmer's market. The starting there is wonderful. It cannot stop there. I mean, I think that's what Daddy's work has done, is introduce culture into the discussion of agriculture, and that's where we still are 35 years after the publication of The Unsettling of America.
What does she mean, culture? What does she mean by that, that we need to impose a sense of culture in all of this? And that's the only way you can turn this little thing into a bigger movement.
Mary Berry is an incredibly important voice on these issues, and she runs the Berry Center in Newcastle, Kentucky, that's really doing the on-the-ground work of trying to figure out how to restore farm communities. And I've had the privilege of working with her and Sam, and I wish she were here because she can say it much better than I can. But the key point she has made again and again that I think gets to what you're saying is that you see the demand for organic and local produce going up, 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 up. And so those of us who are these urban consumers think, oh, well, there's this healthy food movement. But at the same time, you see the number of farmers and rural producers going down, down, down. And there is this disconnect between the urban consumer and the rural producer. And that's the gap that she is trying to fill. And I think what I'll speak for her for a minute, and she'd say it much better than I could, but that what we need to understand is these are two different kinds of cultures, right? The urban consumer might look at the world quite differently than the rural producer. And what we need is more conversations and more connections between those two worlds if we're going to have any kind of economy that will sustain healthy land use and therefore healthy food systems in this country.
What did you learn from Tanya Berry? I love that she's featured in the film, too. I'm guessing she was as reluctant as Wendell or not.
Tanya is the reason why this film happened. I truly believe that. And I made a joke recently when we sort of previewed the film in Kentucky for the Berries and others, was that I was going to retitle the film Bait and Switch, : A Portrait of Tanya Berry. And I thought, you know, I started out thinking I was making a film about my hero, Wendell Berry. And of course, I have great regard for him. But as myself, a homemaker and a mom full-time, Tanya profoundly inspired me. And I think of her every day. And I tell her this, because she elevates the realm of the domestic. As a child who grew up in kind of feminism, I think that I thought, well, to be an empowered, strong woman, I need to have a career and I need to be out of the home and making cookies or homeschooling my kids or making breakfast for my husband would somehow be demeaning. Well, Tanya has showed me not only that the domestic space is a beautiful and important space, but that it is one that can be full of art and artfulness. And she shows that in her life. She is an amazing member of her community. She gives and gives. She's involved in all kinds of things. And so she really shepherded me throughout this project and taught me a lot. And anyone who knows Tanya will tell you, you know, isn't she fabulous? And she's going to be here at Sundance.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm so pleased.
Me too.
I met Wendell in college. I had lived all over the country. Finally, when I got done with school, to 22 different schools, I had moved and moved and moved. And I had a really intense desire to have my children be somewhere where they belong. And Wendell needed to be home. He did not need to be in San Francisco or in Europe or in New York or whatever. We'd done all that, and he needed to be home. And I was flexible. I was. Because I didn't belong anywhere in particular. So I took this on with him. And it's not always been perfect. None of it has been perfect, but it's been right. It's been the right thing.
And Wendell will tell you, and I've heard him say it recently, and Mary has said it, that it's all possible. His whole life, his whole story, all this beautiful writing that we have, Tanya made it all possible.
Let me, I want to end with one of my favorite parts of the film. And this comes early on, where Wendell Berry is talking about imperfection, how farming begins with, as we'll hear in this moment, a vision that's ideal, and then it gets whittled down into something that's imperfect. What does that reflect about sort of the way he sees the world? Because I want to play this moment. I thought it was terrific.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that it kind of gets back to the prologue that you talked about initially, the culture we're in, the image, the screen, this need to create this image that's perfect, a human face that's flawed, that doesn't age, you know, a lawn that is green because it's green made with chemicals and it doesn't change with the seasons. There is an aesthetic in our culture today that is unnatural and not real and doesn't age and doesn't regard the imperfection that is inherent to being human as worthy or as beautiful. And Wendell has that kind of theme throughout his work. There's this wonderful moment in the poem that Wendell read for my film way back when, where he says, he's talking about that we didn't allow some comely thing to grow comely on its own. You know, a weed, we look at a weed as something that should be chopped down and killed with a chemical. Whereas Wendell in our film talks about how dandelions are free, and he calls himself a dandelion man.
I'm a dandelion man, yeah.
Now, these are all a part of that to me, that there needs to be an aesthetic that reflects values, values of community, values of membership, values that are true to what it means to be human and to be imperfect, and that there's beauty in that imperfection.
There is a kind of idealism that seems to be native to farming. Farmers begin every year with a vision of perfection. And every year, in the course of the seasons and the work, this vision is relentlessly whittled down to a real result by human frailty, infallibility, by the mortality of creatures, by pests and diseases, by the weather. The crop year is a long struggle, ended invariably not by the desired perfection, but by the need to accept something less than perfection as the best that could be done.
From Laura Dunn's film Look and See, a Portrait of Wendell Berry, which is screening tomorrow evening in Park City and in Salt Lake City on Saturday. You can get details by going to our website, radiowest.org. Laura Dunn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Larry Warren, Scott Matthews, and Bob Hendricks here at KPCW. David Boyle is our intern. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.